Welcome to Great Minds, and our guest today is Andrea Pezzi, the co-founder of Mint. Mint is one of the companies that is really leading the way and has been in the space now for almost 10 years. And I'm referring to the business of artificial intelligence, powered advertising automation. It is one of the most interesting places and spaces in the business. Mint works with huge global brands out of their headquarters in Milan, where Andrea is as we speak. They work with our friends at MasterCard. They work in sports with the big streaming players and boxing in particular. And they're backed by one of the largest media holding groups in the world. Very interesting place and space. And Andrea, delighted to talk to you today.
Hello, and congratulations for your pronunciation, for your Italian, I should say. Andrea Pezzi is the perfect pronunciation. Typically in the US, I hear something different, which is PZ or something like that.
I'm sure you do. I grew up in New York, in Brooklyn and Queens with lots of Italian friends. And my wife and I had the most wonderful trip for our 30th anniversary to your country. If I could blink myself like the old 60s sitcom Bewitched and be anywhere in the world, it would be in Italy. So
I share the same taste.
a pleasure to talk to you. So, Andrea, your background is so interesting, and there were no hints early on, and let's go back, give or take 25 some odd years, when you were working as a presenter and author at Viacom, that you were going to end up in a tech fueled business that is literally the hottest thing going right now, and for better or worse. And I want to talk about the better and the worse. But let's go back to those early days when you were working as a presenter, a radio DJ, etc. How'd you get into that? And was there any hint in your mind of where you might end up going?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've actually been doing my whole career trying to find something difficult to fix. So I wanted to fix my family and work and make money while enjoying life a little bit. So this is how I got into the, let's say, showbiz kind of opportunity in Italy. Then in London, in MTV. Then I had a lot of friends around me, my colleagues. Back then, we used to call ourselves VJs, video jockey, you know, MTV style kind of presenter. So what I understood is that I had a great opportunity just to learn new things from BBC in London and take advantage of that, you know, that showbiz environment and learn new things. I had a friend, his name was Malcolm Kreese. I used to share my house with him in London. And we decided to build a small, division in MTV Europe that was called MTV Style. We used to go to, you know, brands and try to teach them how to be creative in the same way MTV is. So this is how I really engage with the real life kind of business. Then once the overall TV career was so, growing, that I had to decide whether if I wanted to become a professionist and build my whole life around the TV business, I decided, in fact, to step back and to start a new career, to really try to learn how to engage with, big clients and help them and be creative. Yes, but on something that is a little bit hidden. It's the advertising, creative, and that kind of stuff, right? So becoming an advisor, it was pretty much easy for me because I knew my generation. I knew, all the communication skills were there. So I started, helping big companies, and then step by step being curious, I made up my first company, the second one, and then technology, the AI and all the other interesting new waves of the digital revolution took place. And I wanted to really discover the new frontier of our overall industry, let's call it communication and the digital society, let's say. Layer as well on the technology is pretty much interesting to me. So this is how step by step I enter into, the Mint opportunity, which is to try to define a brand new category in the software enterprise ecosystem that we call advertising resource management, which is a way of saying let's give a little bit of help to big, you know, company to really manage and have more transparency and governance out of their media spend, which is, by the way, as we speak, still now, pretty much a black box. So brands doesn't know where the money goes. So there is a lot to be done. There is a lot that has been done back in the 90s, thanks to ERPs. And then 10, 15 years later, thanks to CRM, the customer, let's say, as a concept, became relevant. So CRM become relevant as a technology, but there is no advertising resource management kind of, you know, software for big enterprise. So this is where my expertise in the advertising, my curiosity and expertise in the technology, you know, shaped the company that I'm driving, that I funded a few years ago, and I'm still driving for a little while.
So let's talk about that journey to artificial intelligence. Mint goes back to 2014, I think. What led you, what was the insight or set of insights that led you to found the company? Usually, Andrea, we would go through much more of someone's journey, in this case, yours. But I think given what you're doing at Mint, you know, in the space with AI is so important and so timely, I'm happy to jump over that and get right to the heart of the issue, if you will. But give us that journey to the founding of Mint, and what were you and your co-founders thinking back at a time when no one was really focused on AI?
You see, I've been studying the digital revolution as a phenomenon. First of all, you need to know that my overall approach, and let me tell you something about myself as well, I come from classical studies and I love philosophy. I love to study things, and I actually consider my job and my career as a way of understanding things and put myself in the position to go right or wrong and then learn if my theory is right or wrong. And this is how I develop myself. And overall, I think the company is a tool that human beings are using to develop their own intelligence, you know, and pleasure is actually what drives, in my opinion, at least my life. And pleasure is always connected to intelligence. So the more intelligent you become, the more pleasure you get out of your existence, let's say. So coming back to my studies, I've been completely taken by the digital revolution, because I remember when I first saw Google in my life, and Napster. You remember Napster?
Of course.
It was an Italian, I think, I can't recall the name. It was an Italian from north of Italy that, you know, invented the MP3 kind of file and concept. So when the MP3 came into Earth, let's call it, what happened is that, you know, the overall music industry has been completely disrupted, because suddenly to listen to music, you didn't have you didn't need any support anymore. You didn't need any record, any physical support. You had the music, and you can get rid of the industry itself, because the industry was based on the physical asset that was meant, you know, to be, let's say, the carryover for the music itself. So I was impressed by the liquid, as we call it, liquid economy. That was the moment where Google disrupted the news, taking the words instead of, you know, the word newspaper. You know, they get rid of the paper and they took the world. While newspapers all over the globe, still now, they actually emphasize the importance of, you know, of the paper, which is a website at the moment. So they've been inventing the banners in the advertising space to substitute the manchette, you know, the small pieces of advertising on the piece of paper. They made pixels instead of small piece of papers, you know, on of advertising on the newspaper, the physical newspapers. So Google, instead, because internet is made of connection, started to sell something completely new on the web, which is the connection itself. So you want to look for a word, and you find the company that is actually identified by that word. So this is how the overall economy has been, let's say, disrupted again by the liquid economy. And because of the liquid economy, we discover then that the asset was not relevant. You don't need to have the physical asset. You just need to have a platform where demand and supply can actually get in touch, the two-side platform kind of concept. And then because you know, and this is actually the sharing economy that was back then and now even more, but 15% of the global economy overall in the Western countries for sure. And then because you discovered the sharing economy, then you understood that there was an amazing and interesting you know, way to make money out of the data. The data is whatever happened when two servers get in touch, let's say, or one server contact another server. So a user get an information. So the data economy is basically it's never been in control, let's say, by the old giants that in the 90s and in the last century were ruling the world. The data economy has been discovered and ruled by Google, by Meta, now we call it Meta, it was Facebook. All these big giants grow up big time because of the ignorance, let me say, of old media industry and old brands. And if you have the data, so thanks to the data economy, then you discover through the machine learning kind of algorithm, the possibility to build an automatic, let's say, we call it now AI, an automatic way of building the future. And just to make it simple, I think the overall story of the digital disrupting the economy is bringing, you know, a huge opportunity to the society. First of all, not just for the efficiency, but first of all, because now we can start to really question things that, you know, has never been questioned so far, which is the social and political, let me say, way of living our lives. So the economy itself, what it means to, you know, to work, and all these questions becomes more and more relevant thanks to the revolution that has brought brought by AI and by digital transformation. So in one way, I'm pretty much excited by what is changing vis-a-vis the society and the culture. And in another aspect, I'm very excited as well about what is happening as an opportunity in the economy and in the way we work. So I've been in love for the very first time on, you know, while everybody was talking on the digital and thinking one day the singularity will change and disrupt the human being itself. We might want to hybridate the human being. And this is what they call the transhumanism, right? So we might want to hybridate the human being with technology. So the more I was, you know, listening to these kind of scenarios for the human beings, I've been more and more attracted to the very, first big giants of the digital and father of the digital transformation, like Microsoft, IBM, or Cisco. You know, those giants, they look at the digital transformation as, and the AI in particular, as something to help human beings to work in a more efficient way without impacting too much the way we live, but trying to give a new tool, more precise tool, to the people without entering in, you know, too much into the, you know, human being physically or the society as we know it. So I decided to drive myself and to study more and more how to build an AI that was capable of helping the professionals that were in my industry to have more and more efficiency out of their daily job, to focus on more creative tasks and, you know, and leave to the AI those robotic and repetitive kind of manual tasks that are actually in the advertising industry, by definition, a lot, I would say 80% of the daily job. So this is what drives me. So I was looking at the overall scenario, the revolution, and I wanted to give an impact to my company that was, let's say, coherent with the way I see the AI as an opportunity.
So let's talk about the current state. That was a great description of your journey to get there. But, you know, and I'm admittedly a layman about this stuff, but there is an awful lot right now of talk about Sam Altman and about what happened at OpenAI and his firing, bringing him back, and very broad-based concerns around which direction this could all go in. Give us your take on the concerns about the tremendous growth that is projected for AI, and in effect, a scenario where the machines are in fact smarter than we are.
Oh, that's like, I think if you look at, you know, our times from a historical perspective, what we are living right now, it's all about your question. I mean, in 200 years, they will call our era the era where the human beings has been, you know, disrupt, and they've been like defining the relationship between the man and the son of the son of God, which is the AI, if you want to call it this way. The AI, it is, I think, an interesting opportunity from my perspective, because we are obliged to think about what is the human being itself. So the more we grow, the more we discuss about the AI, the more, and the intelligence, the real concept of intelligence is pretty much something that we give for granted, but we should go back to what intelligence means, to what the human being is, to what, you know, the disease is, to what the overall purpose of life is, because we give all these concepts for granted because of the culture we have. But I think AI is bringing us into a new era, exactly the same way, you know, industrial revolution. When industrial revolution took place, you had Marx, Karl Marx, designing the society, you know, from scratch. And we had to, you know, to understand that the society, it was not just about working into the, you know, into the land and try to abstract agriculture from the planet and, you know, and survive with what Mother Nature gave us. It was all about building an overall, you know, way of living and an overall structure of interacting with capital, money, and the labor, and all these things that we know by the you know, the books, has been what we think now is normal, is actually the result of that revolution. Now, this new revolution is building a brand new society. And in 100 years from now, even less, we will have a complete different scenario, right? So I think it is interesting now to sit down a little bit and discuss all over again everything. Because if you feel like when you have a, you know, a problem for, you know, you get sick, if you think that that problem is something that you need to solve without questioning the reason why, well, this is a way of thinking about what is a human being that is actually very much in danger, because you are not considering the illness as a message that something within you is bringing to your, you know, intelligent or cautiousness, so that you can, you know, understand something for yourself, so that you can change and possibly evolve. So the moment you see the mistakes as a value and the illness itself as a value, you drive the society towards a certain direction. The moment you feel like the mistake is just an inefficient process of human attitude, or the illness, just something that you don't want to have, you're driving the society into another direction. So I think AI is definitely opening a brand new white piece of paper in front of us. And we need to define, again, with very precise approach, what is everything? Because on, you know, the way we give the fundamental answers this time, and the type of answer we give will design the society of the future. So this is why I think it is very much, you know, interesting for me to try to give my answer building a company, not just as a philosopher, let's say, or as an intellectual, but like building something. And it is not strange that when you feel and you talk about the future of the human beings, you don't have great philosophers right now on stage. You have entrepreneurs. You have people that are building, shaping the future, not discussing about the future. Because it's all about what you do and how finance is backing the vision. I mean, if you look at Facebook or Google, they are backed by an idea that is moving finance. And the idea is one day singularity will come. So there's going to be an AI that will literally overcome the human being, itself. And then Elon Musk, he basically did something different. He said, yes, it might be possible, but if you hybridate the human being with technology, you might build something, Neuralink. You might build something even more powerful than the robot itself. And this is why he's building business model, which is Tesla, which is, a last century industry, the automotive one, hybridate with technology. Tesla is there. And Hyperloop is basically trains, another old industry, hybridated with new touch. And SpaceX, and everything he does is basically to take something from the past, let's say something human, as we consider human, to just push over the human concept into a new kind of human industry type of approach. So again, the philosophy is backing the finance that is backing the industry that we are developing. And I love, as I was saying before, the same old Microsoft, Oracle, Salesforce kind of vision, which is as simple as that. You have a technology to help people to get rid of robotic tasks. That's it.
So let's stay where we are for a second. I want to get into some of the work that Mint is doing with great brands like MasterCard, but I want to stay where we are for a moment. One of the things that I read about Sam Altman, and I'll stay with him, is if things go south, he's already made plans and has a secret place to live in Montana, and he's got a backup plan to go to New Zealand with Peter Thiel if things really go south. And I don't know, Andre, if any of this is true or not true, but it seemed like it was. And you hear words like Bond villain. I'm reminded of, it wasn't the great era of Bond, the Pierce Brosnan era, but I remember in one of them, I think it was Christopher Walken was the bad guy. And, I always have that image in my head. I think his character's name was Zoran, of, if this thing really heads south. Are those concerns warranted? Are they concerns that you have? And whether it's true or not true that he has one or two backup places to live off the grid, when you read about that with someone who's considered to be one of the architects of the modern AI world and an important player who's not aligned with a corporate interest, referring principally to Microsoft, Meta, or Google, what's your take on that?
You see, I think they're right, but there is a bias in what, I mean, the way we see things, because we tend to believe that the humanity, let's say, the overall humanity is more of the same, let's say, evolving all together, and we have the same problems, the same kind of, let's say, intelligence or sensitivity or sensibility, if you want. But it's not the case. I mean, we've been discovering a certain degree of equality, let's say, over the last few years, but few decades. But I think AI will replace what in the past was the slavery, and there will be, and this is all about your intelligence. There will be a moment where AI will be very much dangerous for those people that are not in the position to defend themselves. So it is a social problem. Yes, huge. Is this problem be equal for everybody? Not at all. So I think we'll create a lot of medieval kind of, let's say, culture. In the future, we will go back to the past in a way, with a more control, more, let's say, less freedom, less, but not for all of the, you know, of the people. I think Alman is one of those that doesn't have any problem anyway, right? So I don't see his attitude or his worries as something that that I can consider a benchmark. I see the people that doesn't even understand what is going on being in very big trouble, while those, you know, those one that understands the problem, they see, and I think we do see, whomever is, you know, is listening to this podcast for sure, sees the problem coming. We will manage, not in the countryside, but we will manage a way to increase our capacity and be able to reconnect with the real life again. So I'm worried, yes, for a lot of the the major part of the population will be impacted badly by this story, by this situation. But I think a lot will evolve in a better and more wise kind of way of living. So that's my take.
Very, very complicated. And one more question here. It's very often the case when a new technology of the scale and scope of AI emerges that, certain jobs and job categories are compromised and or disappear completely, but they are typically replaced as one door closes, another opens. Is that what you think will happen here, or are the job growth opportunities tied to AI focused largely on sort of an elite skill set, engineering based, and that many jobs will in fact disappear completely at a lower and mid-level?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of jobs will completely disappear for sure. And I think, can I go back one second before I answer this question? Because I want to say something that might be interesting, you know, for you to comment on, which is the simple fact that technology and AI doesn't know a very human status of mind, which is to be bored. So I get bored by things. And I think human beings one day, someday you just get bored by your mobile phone always with you, and you just say, what the hell? So we don't know how this generation, the youngest one, will get bored. And if they, you know, will get bored in 10 years time from now, and what is going to be the downside effect for the economy, when this will happen. But AI doesn't think, doesn't see the boring, the boring feeling that the human being has embedded in his, you know, in his soul in a way. We need to get bored. We experiment things. We get obsessed by things. Then one day we get bored and it's over. So this is something that gives me a little bit of hope vis-a-vis the, you know, the discussion we had. Then coming back to the way the industry, the jobs will be reshaped by AI. As I said, for sure, a lot of jobs will be completely, will disappear completely. There is no, you know, no doubt about that. And I cannot even say that only those that are more creative will survive, because Gen AI can do the job, the creative job as well. So something will anyway remain, which is, I see two major roles, which is, one role is the responsibility. I don't see the AI to take the overall responsibility for what the AI produce. So there will be always a human layer that takes the responsibility for some reason, even if it's a dogma, because we don't know what we are, you know, what we receive by AI. But there's going to be a human being anyway in the process that needs to validate, even with gut feeling or whatever. And I don't know how this will impact the workflow in the companies. For the time being, in the big multinational corporation, you typically call McKinsey if you are a manager, because you want somebody else to be blamed if something goes wrong. And the more the brand of the advisor is relevant, and the more you want to buy that brand, right? McKinsey, BCG, these kind of people does exist, not just because of the great capacity and work they can do, but also because they are trusted. And AI will be trusted by the simple fact that the AI will be better than the human beings. So once we will have the AI product in our hand, it's going to be very difficult for a human being to say no to that process, elaborated by the computer. But still, we will be needed in the process. There's going to be a human being in the needs to be in the workflow process. Then there is another layer that I think is, as I said, a layer of a few smaller and smaller elite of people that will not be part of the workflow and will make money out of the money. And it's an evolution of the finance as we know it, but it's going to be driven by AI and will create more and more that elite that will be in the position to turn off things and turn on things based on, overall and geopolitical, let's say, needs. And so there is another layer, in my opinion, of conversation that is more political than anything else. So this is what I see. So, I mean, there's going to be the human being that is just the one that needs to be in the process to take the responsibility, and then a bigger, higher layer of people that will definitely keep a little bit of control on the overall future, and will take benefit of that, creating and shaping the world as they think is the best possible scenario. Maybe not the right one, but they will be in the position to do it.
So this, in simple terms, is an awfully big enchilada that we are going to have to really keep a close eye on going forward.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about Mint. And Andrea, can you walk us through sort of the process? We have a lot of good friends, dear friends at MasterCard. They happen to think their global CMO, Rajaminar, is the very best in class for everything he does and the vision that he and his team execute at MasterCard. Talk about how you're working with a great global brand like that particular one in bringing AI-powered solutions to the table for them.
Specifically, if you're referring to MasterCard,
we can go with them or any. I know they're a client, so any example really of your choosing. But yeah. I chose them knowing they are a client and happen to be someone that we know and like a whole bunch.
Yeah. So let me give you in general the overview of what we do. What we have is a SaaS platform that integrates with more than 450 different technology. Having said that, and you need to know that every single brand, when they do advertising, when they drive, when they launch a campaign, they have to use at least 20 to 30 different technology. And it's very complex. This is why media agency are making the job instead of, you know, of the brand itself. The brand knows everything when it goes to the supply chain, payroll, marketing. You know, as I said, ERP and CRM is there to help the company to really understand everything. But when they need to put the money on the table for the advertising, it's a black box. They just give the money to the media agency and they don't know anything. No governance, no transparency. They don't know where the money goes. They don't know where and what is happening, and they don't know how to optimize. This is actually what we wanted to solve, to give a SaaS, so a software enterprise solution that integrating with the overall ad tech environment. Is not an ad tech. Mint is not an ad tech, but it integrates with all the ad tech industry and technologies out there to make sure that the brand can have a single source of truth and build the so-called advertising equity. Because every dollar you put on the market gives you back the capacity to collect data. And if you have an AI, you capitalize that data and you create a more and more efficient algorithm to optimize your media spend over time. When you have multinational corporations, and maybe you use different media agency all over the globe, you need to have different, you have different know-how, you have different technology. Now with Mint, you have one unique technology with different people in different part of the, of the world using the same technology. So if you are at the top of the pyramid, if you have the CMO, you can really see in every single region and at the local level what is going on, where the money is going. You can see and benchmark the best practice and apply the same practice somewhere else. So you have the full control of the media spend. If you are the CFO, you have it. The CIO, bigger capacity to integrate and create what we call the data-driven company. Again, coming back to the future. There's going to be one day when the company will integrating ARM, Mint, with ERP and CRM, they will have basically data from every single touch point of the company, and an AI will drive decision, strategic decision, vis-a-vis every single function of the company. And this is what we do. Our mission is, in fact, to complete the software enterprise ecosystem with our solution.
Give us the reaction of the clients. Are they, do you see them, putting a lot more resource on it based on the results that you're driving? Give us sort of a finger on the pulse of where we are right now at that intersection of technology, AI, and brands, which is exactly the space where Mint sits.
The clients are starting really to understand that the advertising, again, coming back to the digital revolution, there is a complete overlapping between the market and the enterprise itself. So you cannot just think about the company as an entity that is divided by the market. And the advertising is the most relevant and impactful kind of layer and touch point for the brand. To have a technology that drives all the data into your company and have and to give you governance and control over the media spend means that you build an incredible, you turn your face towards the future, let's say. Otherwise, you're stuck into the black, the black box kind of approach. So when we talk with clients, we see they start to really understand what is the advertising, because you cannot even imagine how many brands, they're just relying on suppliers. They've been doing advertising over time, thinking, and I know you've been interviewing a lot of people, very talented people, very much focused on the creative side of the story, but not too much into the media spend. So when you talk to a big CMO in the automotive, for instance, you see people that talks about how impactful is the creative, how great is the idea, the identity, and blah, blah, blah. And they just don't care. How many times I, you know, I've been discussing with them, and they then they just step out from the room saying, you know, and then, you know, I'm a creative guy, and for the media, I don't care. We have our own media agency. And this is completely crazy, in my opinion, because this is where the value is, because the touch point and the money that you spend in the media is, it's a huge amount of money. It's $800 billion globally. And the data that is collected by this, you know, by this money, and thanks to this money, is actually used and you know, is used by the giants, the tech giants, and is actually creating their growth. And you see how big is their growth. And is actually their growth is the missing opportunity for the brands that has been putting the money on the market. So this is where we come into, you know, into the story. We want to give back to the brand this advertising equity, so that they can really start to understand the advertising, becoming more passionate, even remaining creative, but understanding where the money goes, understanding the logic of every single creative asset and how you can generate more revenue for your company, more awareness for your company, thanks to the data that you collect, if you do have a technology that belongs to yourself. And again, you might have different media agencies in the world, but you have one single technology. You might want to change your media agency, but you keep your technology and you have another agency hands on keyboards in the same technology. So you increase the quality of your AI thanks to the fact that you change over time the agency. So better talents, more talent, different approach will increase the quality of your AI. And this is actually what it's all about.
Fantastic stuff. So interesting. And we're absolutely going to have to do a part two here. There are so many layers of this onion to peel off. But I can't tell you what an enjoyable discussion this has been, Andrea. Thank you for doing this, for making it work. I love having you on Great Minds. I love talking to someone who's sitting in Milan as we speak. And I think digging into the media side of AI and where that fits in the equation is a hot tip by you that I think we will absolutely follow. We love what Mint is doing in this space and look forward to continuing the conversation with you.
Thank you very much, Matt.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers. Have a great day.
Ciao.